You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Welcome to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, episode number 168. People who succeed are not the ones who never fail, but they are the people who never quit. Anonymous.
Broadcasting from a dark, windowless room in Hollywood, when we really should be working on that next draft. It's the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast, showing you the craft and business of screenwriting while teaching you how to make your screenplay bulletproof. And here's your host, Alex Ferrari.
Welcome, welcome to another episode of the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast. I am your humble host, Alex Ferrari. Now, today's show is sponsored by Bulletproof Script Coverage. Now, unlike other script coverage services, Bulletproof Script Coverage actually focuses on the kind of project you are and the goals of the project you are. So we actually break it down by three categories: micro budget, indie film market, and studio film. There's no reason to get coverage from a reader that's used to reading tentpole movies when your movie's going to be done for $100,000. And we wanted to focus on that at Bulletproof Script Coverage. Our readers have worked with Marvel Studios, CAA, WME, NBC, HBO, Disney, Scott Free, Warner Brothers, The Blacklist, and many, many more. So if you need your screenplay or TV script covered by professional readers, head on over to covermyscreenplay.com. Today's show is also sponsored by Indie Film Hustle Pro, our private and growing community for filmmakers and screenwriters. It was created for film creatives like you to meet, network, and support each other, learn from film industry experts, and to get the answers to your burning questions and more. The journey in this business is rough. There is no guarantee to success, but your chances of reaching your goals dramatically improve when you find others who are on the same journey as you and you work together towards a common goal. That is why I put together IFH Pro. Inside, you'll get professional networking, private and safe spaces to discuss the film business, access to advanced tools and education, up-to-date education, exclusive content not available publicly, access to IFH Pro workshops, webinars, special guests, and so, so much more. If you want to check it out, head over to indiefilmhustle.com/pro. Well, guys, today we have a special Sundance Film Festival edition of the show. We have the co-writer of the Sundance film, God's Country, Shay Obana, and the film stars Westworld's Thandiwe Newton. Now, if you're interested in going deeper into God's Country and the making of God's Country, we also have the other co-writer and director of the film, Julian Higgins, on the Indie Film Hustle podcast on episode 549. Now, I love talking to Shay because it was a really inspirational talk about how he kept going through the tough times. It's been overnight success of 12 years of him trying to make things happen for himself, and how he kept going, how he was able to build a group of guys that were able to help, that we were all able to help each other and bring each other up and carry each other during the tough times. And it was really a masterclass on how to make it in LA, how to make it as a writer, and what to do. So please enjoy my conversation with Shay Obana. I'd like to welcome to the show Shay Obana. How you doing, Shay?
I'm good. I'm feeling good. I'm excited. Obviously, it's a big week, and it's been a long time coming. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good.
So yeah, man. First of all, congratulations on being accepted into Sundance, writing a film that's accepted to Sundance, and so it's one of the better ones I've seen at the festival this year so far. So really, really congrats. But before we get into the magical lottery ticket that is the Sundance acceptance, and we'll talk all about that. How did you get started in the business, man?
In the business? I'd say I officially got started in the business. My first official job was in 2019, when I got my first job in a writer's room as a staff writer on the limited series Evil, which is about Evel Knievel, which I think technically is still in development. but I'd say my start, I came out to LA about 12 years ago, 2009. I got into AFI, the American Film Institute.
Sure.
And when I got in, I got accepted as a screenwriter the way AFI is, if anybody knows anything about American Film Institute, it's a conservatory model. So you work in your discipline, in your craft. So they accept like 28 directors, 28 writers, 28 producers, and 28 cinematographers, and also production designers and editors. And the first year, you all working together on your short films. And then the second year, you work primarily on the thesis film. And as the writers, we're like working on like, you know, writing, a couple of features. When I got to AFI, I hadn't had a plan on being in television. So I took a TV class my second year, and that just like kind of like really changed. And at the time, it was like the golden age of television, like Mad Men and Breaking Bad are popping off. And so that was kind of like, had a huge effect on me as a writer. That was when I decided I also want to work in TV as well. But when I got to AFI, I had a plan, which was to, and this is something I've heard from people that I respect, which is like network across. So when I got to AFI, my plan was to like find my tribe. So when I got there, I immediately tried to connect and collaborate with people whose work I respected and who were really cool people. And so when I got there, when I was there, me and like three other writers and a director formed a collective. And we just started like, obviously we were working at AFI, but you know, on our own, we would be writing like shorts, sketches. And we were like doing this stuff while at AFI. Then right after AFI, we were still working. We were like, you know, do our own little projects. And we even did like a web series. And so like those, they don't tell you this in school, but you know, it's generally when you get out of school, nobody's offering you a $100 million feature or a $5 feature to write or direct. And the TV industry isn't going to like, hey, we got this staffing job on Succession. Come get it like that. It don't really work like that. So we were like grinding right out of school, making our own stuff and kind of like getting better and working on our own material. And that kind of got us noticed by different entities that kind of helped me skip a few steps. Like I was never a writer's assistant. I was never really a PA. I never really did the intern thing. And so like, just kind of like working in that collective gave me the opportunity to work and to get my stuff seen and also get better. And ultimately like kind of take a different path than probably most people take. Mm-hmm. And it was at working in that collective that we pulled all our resources together and eventually made an independent feature. Really low budget independent feature called Low Life, which is a small crime film. It's an ensemble crime film. I even acted it as well. And that was kind of the thing that really kind of like pushed things forward. I think it was the thing that ultimately led me to get representation and ultimately led me to meeting Julian and ultimately led me to God's country.
So you mean to tell me when you show up to LA, they don't just hand you a ticket to go to the studio and just start writing and get paid? They don't do that?
It was the most surprising thing ever. Because I was going to be like Shane Black. Like I was just like, yo, man, when am I going to get my like
$3 million spec?
Variety front page, like my $5 million against the $10 million advance. Like where's it? It's supposed to come immediately after I graduate. Why?
Because they did not recognize your genius early on. I think we all have this problem.
Yes. We absolutely all have this problem, and it needs to be rectified.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question, man. No, I find it really interesting that you started off, you were smart. I don't know if you were smart enough, but you figured it out that doing it alone, especially as a writer, because writer is a very solitary profession. And writers generally don't, you know, I'm a writer. I've worked with writers. You know, sometimes you've got really personable writers and other writers who just are Charlie Kaufman sitting in the corner. So writers don't generally think about a collective or about networking or about putting together a team or a group of people, like-minded people to try to get something made. And that is so valuable because I think what you just said is if you wouldn't have done that, you wouldn't have been able to get your first feature made. You wouldn't get you wouldn't have been able to get your representation, so on and so forth. So it was this group that you kind of all lifted yourselves up. I mean, look, Spielberg, Lucas, Coppola, Scorsese, they all did it back in the day. They got this group together and they helped each other out.
And it was crazy. I didn't even know that. Like I had already came in with that mentality, but I didn't even know that those guys did that until I like watched like the Spielberg document. I had heard about it before, but I had never actually seen it. Like actually seeing images of Spielberg on the Scarface set with like a in the big shootout with the, like a mask on. I was like, Spielberg like worked like B camera on that. You know what I mean? So like right. even they, the masters, were thinking of that. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, it was something inherent. And I agree, as writers, we're not necessarily like, it seems antithetical to the way we work to be like collaborative. But what happened, like, it was AFI for me going to a place like the American Film Institute, or I mean, I think any really good graduate, undergraduate film school, even graduate program, if you go, like, everybody's on the same level as you, and generally everybody's pretty good. They're just undervalued at that point because you're young or whatever. That's the time to like build those relationships and build those collaborations and not try to go, you know, network to go write a query letter to Spielberg or something like that, because like that's they're not on your, like, I hate to say it, but like it's levels to this, and they're at a different level. Come up with the people that are like grinding out there with you, and it's super rewarding personally, but it gives you pool resources, you know what
right.
I mean?
Right.
Money, talent, time, you're all on the same
connections. Level. Yeah.
Yeah, connections. It's one of my biggest pieces of advice. I'm not a big on advice, but like that's a big piece of advice that I would give to any really crafts person, but specifically like writers and directors. Like at least with like cinematographers and other people, like you, they're working. Like all my friends are the DPs and were editors, constantly working. You know what I mean? And like with the writers and directors, it's a little bit tougher to crack. You know, nobody, like I said, nobody's offering you like a film. Nobody's offering you a TV show. So you have to like find ways to work. And network and build and kind of build yourself as a creator.
Yeah, I think it, you know, being in the town like LA, man, if you don't have friends, if you don't have relationships, you can't get anywhere, man. You just can't. And that's something that they don't teach you. They don't teach you that at school. They, you know, like, you don't understand what the value is of those relationships, because all of my jobs when I first got to LA, man, were friends of a friend. I got to LA, I knew two people, a DP, mm-hmm. and I knew two DPs. That was mm-hmm. it. And yes. within 2 or 3 months, I was nonstop working as an editor, mm-hmm. colorist, post supervisor. And then it just started to build on itself, because you're like, oh, this guy's really good. Why don't you do this? But it was all about those building those relationships, going to these little parties and like, you know, introducing mm-hmm. yourself and all this kind of stuff. Man, do you know, I'll tell you a quick story. You know, Barry Sonnenfeld, right? The Coen brothers. You know, Barry was the DP on Blood Simple. Do you know how he got that job? He told me when he was on the show. He said, "Hey man, listen. How'd you get involved with the Coen brothers?" He goes, "I went to this party. I was young. I just got finished doing porn, because that was how he paid off his first camera."
That's right. I think I heard about that. Yeah.
So then he's like, "I'm sitting in the corner, and I look over, and then in the other corner, there's this tall, lanky dude." So I walk over to him. "Hey, what's your name?" He goes, "I'm Joel." He goes, "Oh, I'm Barry." He's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "I'm shooting this thing this weekend. We're shooting this trailer for this movie that we're trying to get raise money for, Blood Simple." He's like, "Well, I got a 60 millimeter camera." He goes, "You're hired." That was it. I'm like, really? And that was the way, and that's how Barry Sonnenfeld and Joel and Ethan took off. But it was about you got to put yourself out there, man. You're absolutely right.
Especially as a writer. Especially because as writers, like you said, like a lot of us are like, some of us are Charlie Kaufman people, but a lot of us are not really super like the social butterflies. Some of us are, obviously. But you got to get out, especially in LA.
No.
You got to get out there. You got to network. You got to meet people. You can be the best writer in the world, but if you're just sitting in the corner writing like these amazing scripts that nobody's really getting a chance to see. And a lot of times they're hiring you. Not just the work, they're literally hiring you. Like they want to be in business with you. And nobody's gonna know that if you're just sitting in your room all day and you're not getting out and you're not meeting people, or at least if you're not a big social person, connect and collaborate with people who can kind of like work those avenues for you, or at least put you in those situations to like be the icebreaker in those social situations. You know
what I mean? Would you, at the beginning of your career, if you found a director or a producer, and you guys are just starting out, I'm like, "Listen, man, if you get this produced, I know you don't got any money, pay me something on the back end." Would you rather have something that's been produced and no money at the beginning, or a little bit of money and nothing gets produced?
The former, like 100%. Like I am 100% like the person that's the way we came up, like mm-hmm. very little money, but it's being produced. That has a higher value to the industry than having money and not really having anything out there. that's always been the way I work. That's kind of the way the people that I looked up to, that's kind of the way they came up. You know, people like really like just like, let's get it made. Even we'll make our budget our aesthetic. You know what I mean? Like, we'll make our resources our aesthetic because we're that good as creatives. So, yeah, I'm 100% in that camp of just like not having a lot of money and getting out there and producing something.
Now, was there a film that lit your fire to come into this ridiculous business?
I don't know if there was a specific, because the films that I love are not. Well, I mean, for me, like, my favorite film of all time is Heat. I'm a Michael Mann fan. So, like, I just like, and I like to write in the crime. I love like crime films and really elevated, you know, crime cinema. And so for me, that's the film where I was just like, man, this is like you can make something that just like sits with you forever, that you constantly revisit. So I don't know if I would say that was the film that got me in the industry. You know what's funny? This is gonna, like, as a kid, I always say this. This is gonna be funny. So Rocky IV was the first movie I saw as a kid that I was just like, yo, I want to do this.
Like, this is so weird. Hey, man, listen. I just had a filmmaker on who made an entire movie about the opening of Rocky III in Staten Island and how it affected him and his friends and stuff like that.
Yeah,
dude, Rocky IV. Dude, you could turn on Rocky IV, right? I literally, you know what? You want to hear something funny? Yesterday, in traveling through YouTube, the end fight sequence from Rocky IV came up. I'm like, hey, do you want to watch the end fight? I'm like, yes. And I just sat there and watched Drago and Rocky fight. I've seen that fight a million times. But there's something about what Stallone did, man, and with that character and the, like, with Mr. T and Rocky and 3 and 4 specifically. Three and four specifically. Two I enjoyed. One is a masterpiece. Five we don't talk about. And then Rocky Balboa was like, I can't believe he did it again. Like, it was like, what?
I'm a Rocky apologist. Obviously, when the funny thing, when Creed came out, I got mad because I was like, why didn't I write that? Son of Apollo? What are you talking about? Like, I come up with an idea. I was so mad about that. And then I was like championing it, like, you know, from the moment I saw it. Creed 2 was a different story because I felt like, in Creed 2, I was rooting for Drago's kid. I was like, no. I was like, I need Drago's kid to win in Creed 2. Drago's kid had it a little bit rougher than...
I would agree with you, man. Like, yeah, you can't have... Michael B's often, you know, in the mansion. He's like, man, I lost it. I'm like, no, you have not. Look at you.
You're good. If I would have done Creed 2, he would have lost in Creed 2. And then Creed 3 would have been a rematch. You know what I mean? That would have been like the way I would have done it. But... Long story short, Rocky 3 and Rocky 4, they get reduced as like the campy ones.
Oh, but they're so much fun.
But like, don't sleep on it. Like, the stakes are so, like, I mean, the stakes in Rocky 4 couldn't be higher. It's literally like we're trying to stop a nuclear war. When Rocky beats Drago, he destroys the Soviet Union. Like, what are you talking about? So, like, I'm joking around. But I love, like, for me, as a kid watching that, it was just like, that was when, like, you're dreaming. You're like, I remember, like, watching that, putting popcorn in my mouth and play boxing with my buddy. And that was when I was just like, yo, I want this feeling that I have right now. I want to give this feeling to other people. You know what I mean? So that's probably the movie that I remember that had the most effect on me.
You see, and that's the funny, I love that you said that, man. This feeling I want to give to other people, that's a really good place to come from as a writer, as a creative, that you're trying to give back through your art to your community in one way, shape, or form, to the world in one way, shape, or form, as opposed to being a more of egocentric place of like, I need to be big, I need to be this or that. Those guys, I've met those guys. It's hard, man. This business is so damn hard in general. Yep. And if you think, I know you've met them, you know, guys and gals who think that, you know, they're the last Coke in the desert, and they think that, you know, and you just like, you're doing it for the wrong reasons, man. You're doing it for the wrong reason. You won't make it.
No, 100%. Like, for me, it is about, like, I always say this, I pray at the temple of story. I'm a writer, you know what I mean? So, like, ego, you know, this happened in God's country. Like, for me, like, my ego is checked at the door, especially when I'm collaborating on something that's a personal project with people that I actually love. You know what I mean? People that I consider, like, you know, contemporaries or friends or whatever you want to call it. I want to give some kid or some adult or whoever, like, the feeling that I got from watching, you know, from watching Rocky IV the first time or watching Heat 75,000 times. You know what I mean? I want to give people that feeling. And so that's why I do this.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
Now, I got to ask you, man, because I know there's a lot of young writers listening. How did you keep going all those years that when doors weren't opening, man, doors weren't opening, things weren't happening the way you wanted to, and you just kept your head down and you just kept going? If I may use a Rocky quote, you know, it's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And it's so true. What did you do to make it through those? Because we're not talking about months. We're talking about years. So there must have been something that you did that made you wake up every morning like, man, I got to write, or I got to do this, or I got to keep going. What was that thing?
I think it was kind of two things. One thing was like, this is going to sound really like hokey, but you just have to get to a point where you're like, there's no, like you have to actually define yourself and declare that you are a writer, that you are a director. Like a lot of people, they like when it is a mental thing. Like you'll be in conversations and you'll be like, "Well, I'm studying to be a director, or I'm working toward, you know, making my first." You know, you have to mentally like tell yourself, even if you're working, if you're working a day job at a grocery store or wherever, you have to tell yourself mentally that I am a writer. You know that, like you have to approach whatever that day job is, you have to approach it as it's literally what I do to pay the bills. But like what I am is a writer. So if that means like I have to, like if I have an earlier shift at my job, that means when I get off, I'm writing for the rest of the day. Or I get up if I have I get up in the morning and I write. So like the intention is that my day and my focus is on my craft and everything else kind of like comes second to that. And then like the other thing is like what I mentioned earlier about if you have a tribe. If you have a group, y'all hold each other down. Like, one of you might be having like a lean time and the other one, like you're constantly, for me, what helped me move forward was like, I had these other people that I was, for lack of a better word, like beholden to, like we all worked together. And it was just like, even if in our leanest times, we weren't making any money, it felt like I was working, because even us just going out on the weekend and making like, just the stupidest sketch, you know, by Dodger Stadium or something like that. That felt the same way as I felt making God's Country with Tandy Way Newton. You know what I mean? It's just like having that group that you're in it together, it really kind of insulates you from those really hard times. And yeah, it takes years, but those years, they tend to like fly by because you're making progress. You're constantly moving forward. Like be intentional and set a plan. Like, you know, like, okay, well, this month we're going to make, you know, this little short scene. And then, you know, in the summer, let's make like a short film. We'll make a sketch. And then let's work. Maybe we'll do a web series, you know, like, and if you like, just always like kind of plan and always kind of like move forward, take incremental steps, with the next thing. That's kind of what got me through my kind of like, because like I said, I didn't have the most traditional route to where I got. That kind of helped me power through that non-traditional path.
And then that's how you got Low Life made. Like Low Life was made specifically by you getting your group together. Like, we're going to go make a feature.
And literally the way Low Life happened was, it was like almost like a huge collection of all these sketches that we worked. Like a lot of the sketches that we had worked on, some of them were baked into the script. Some of the characters we had worked on, they were in other sketches. So it was kind of like expanding those characters. So it kind of became this weird universe, almost like an MCU, but, you know, our MCU of characters. And it just kind of like came together in this one film. And obviously, like, we were inspired. We were inspired by Tarantino, the Scorsese's of the world. We all grew up, you know, watching like those like auteur, you know, the Shane Blacks, that genre storytelling in the specific space. So it's like we were very much influenced by the stuff that we were really into, like, you know, the 80s big blockbuster stuff, but also like, you know, Bad Lieutenant, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we were constantly like, you know, pushing each other and moving forward.
That's awesome, man. That's great. And I hope everyone listening takes a lesson, man, because it's almost like a mastermind. Like, it's a mastermind that is like you're working with a group of people that you're constantly helping each other, but you're also keeping yourself accountable to each other. And even when you're not working, quote unquote, and not making money, you guys are still working on something on the weekends, or you're still working on something. You keep exercising the muscle, if you will.
Yep. That was what it's about. That's what the collective was for me. It was constantly, because if you don't, like, because those years are so lean, if you don't exercise that muscle, if you're not out there putting in the work, then yeah, like, it's gonna be a longer process, or all you're doing is you're just really setting yourself up, because it's so difficult to break in this. We've all heard the stories, but if you're really out there exercising that muscle, people will see it. People will find you. The industry will find you. If you're out there like doing like it, the way that I approach things, that's how it worked out.
So when did you literally declare yourself a writer? Because I know for me, when I sat down and started writing my first script and my first book, you know, it took me a minute. There's a lot of imposter syndrome that happens in our business. Yeah. A lot of imposter syndromes. I've talked to the Oscar winners who still freaking have it. I'm like, are you kidding? Are you like kidding me? I'm like, you just won an Oscar. They're like, yeah, but I've had directors who are on set. I'm like, yeah, I feel like security is going to take me off in a day. I'm like, you've made $1 billion at the box office. Like, I know. So it's a straight thing. So what was it, that thing, that fear that you had to break through to finally declare yourself like, I'm a freaking writer? Because it is a conscious choice. It is a conscious choice you make. Because I had to make it personally.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to go. I mean, I feel like it was right around the time we did Low Life.
Okay.
Because I was literally like, I was like working. I was acting in Low Life too.
Yeah.
So I'm like working. I'm working a day job. You know, making very little money, but I'm obviously working with my guys. And it was something about when we finally, like, we had worked on Low Life, we had wrote it like a writer's room, and it was something about that first day when we started like making it at some seedy motel, you know, in Studio City, where literally like crime is happening around. So it was like it was in the air. Like, we didn't just point the camera and shoot. Like, we don't got to make this stuff up. It was around that moment where it was just like, my bank account, there's nothing in here. I'm waking up at like 3 a.m. to go walk the set, and I'm making no money. But I was like, this is it. I'm doing it. That was like, it was around that time where I was like, you know what? I'm the brokest I've ever been in my life, but I'm a writer. Like, I'm literally doing this. And from that point on, the mentality was different. Like, obviously, like, I didn't come out of Low Life and immediately get a job. It still took some time. But from that moment on, I saw myself as a writer. I saw myself as a creative, and everything else I did, it was just what you got to do to eat. You know what I mean? But yeah, it was around the time of Low Life.
It's so funny because you said, I was the brokest in my life, but I'm a writer. That's a quote. It's so true. And I saw I saw your trailer for Low Life, and I was like, I know that motel. I used to drive by it all the time.
Yeah, that motel's got some history. I don't even know if it's still around, but like, yeah. That motel had a history, and it was perfect for Low Life.
Oh no, it's yeah.
We shot there before. The funny thing is, we had shot everything coming full circle. We had shot part of a web series there before, so we were going to shoot in a different location in Low Life, but we lost that location, and that motel was available. So let's go back. You know what I mean? So it was like graduation.
That's hilarious, man. Yeah. Now, you've worked in some writers' rooms, and you've also worked alone. As a feature writer, what did you bring from the writer's room into your feature work, and vice versa? What did you bring into your feature work from your feature work into the writer's room? Because it's two very different feels. Dude, I mean, writer's rooms is a completely different environment than you just sitting down writing. So is there anything you brought from each other to help each other in each other's?
What helped me, like I said, I'd never been a writer's assistant. I had never really been a PA. So I didn't have professional experience in the writer's room. But because of the collective, for like the past like 5 years before I got that job, we worked like a writer's room. So a lot of the habits that I saw in a writer's room, I learned in working with my guys. So like, but it would help me because like the imposter syndrome, I'm not like the biggest like pitcher in terms of like I'm constantly like pitching stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in the writer's room, specifically comedy writer's room, that's really what you're doing. And so I kind of honed that craft with my guys. I mean, when you're in a group of guys and, you know, we're like, you know, we're like cracking on each other and it could be really like testosterone-y, whatever. Like, you learn to kind of like to pitch, and you learn how to like, sometimes you're gonna have a bad pitch and it may not work out, but keep, you know, it doesn't, don't stop. Don't let it stop you from continue to move forward. So like, it helped me, like when I finally got my first professional writer's room, the reason I was able to get that job and then I was able to kind of like skip a bunch of steps and be successful was because I had honed those skills working with my guys on Low Life. We literally wrote Low Life like a writer's room. We broke it. We broke story. We assigned each other different sections and we would go off and write our section, bring it back. And then we would like, you know, edit together like a writer's room. So like that helped me to really make that transition, even though I still felt some imposter syndrome. It got me that first job, but it also helped me make that transition. Like that was a tough transition. It's like going from like, it literally is like going from high school to the pros as an athlete. So that helped me, like being able to like have that experience with my guys helped me make that transition. And in terms of going from the writer's room to feature, I think it's all about process and time management. You know, in a writer's room, a professional writer's room, like you're constantly working, you're working against deadlines. Like it's got to get done, you know, and you're getting assignments, and it's much more about time management. I think in the feature world, specifically when you're working alone, you generally don't have any like deadlines you're trying to hit, or you're just kind of like going with the flow. But working in a writer's room helped me, and I guess you can say specifically with God's Country, it really helped with like process and development and breaking story and time management. I think those kind of like different virtues or whatever you want to call them, that's what I kind of took from like the writer's room world and brought it to the feature world.
Now, before we get into God's Country, man, I need to ask you, what was it like getting the phone call, or how did you find out that you got into Sundance? I always love asking these stories.
Julian, my partner, he got the call. And then one day he called me and he was just like, so it is like whenever like good things happen, it's kind of Julian. He's like, so there's some news. And I weirdly had this feeling. I was like, this is around the time that I think they start announcing Sundance. So kind of like, I wasn't like, I hate to say, this is going to sound really, I wasn't like really surprised. It was cool. It was awesome. And it's an awesome feeling, but it's also part of me that just like, I was like, man, the work we put in on this particular film, the themes, just like the people that are involved in it, it felt like it was perfect for Sundance, but you never know. Sometimes these things are political or whatever, what mm-hmm, have you. So mm-hmm. It still is cool. But yeah, like Julian called me up and was just like, so news. And then he was like, we got it to Sundance. And it was just like, wow. I definitely had to take a moment to be like, could you repeat that? You know what I mean? So yeah. And then we like went out like that, me and June, when I grabbed a beer. And then it was kind of us just really reflecting, just really being like, man, this has been like a 5-year process. And this is kind of like the culmination of everything.
Yeah. How long did it take to get the movie off the ground?
It took, me and Julian met late 2016. We started talking about potentially doing a project early 2017. I think 2018, we went to Montana because I'd never been. Like, we shot in Montana and the story set in the Mountain West. So he had been before because he had made the short version of the film. And so he had shot in Montana before. He had familiarity in Montana. And his DP, Andrew Wheeler, like, he part-time lives in Montana. So I had never been. And so 2018, we go to Montana. That was huge on my process, like being able to go and see the landscape and see the terrain and kind of see the environment. It helped with me to write, you know, to actually write those scenes. A lot of ideas that I came up with when we were in 2018, we went to go to Montana. So 2018, we go to Montana and we started writing the script around that time. And then like we were going to shoot early 2019, but we just felt like we didn't have enough financing to actually do the film the way we wanted to do it. So we didn't start shooting until February 2020. So we start talking about the film in 2017, start working on the script like 2018. We don't start shooting until 2020.
Nothing happened in 2020. So you were just, it's a smooth sailing in 2020 for you, right? In production wise?
No, we shot. We started shooting February. Oh, yeah.
You took a second. Took you a second.
That's trauma, man. You hit me with the trauma right now. Yeah. So something happened in 2020, like literally February, March 2020 is when the world just like changed. And we were making our movie at that time, and we had about 2 weeks left on the schedule. We're literally shooting in a mortuary, and we get the call like, yeah, we got to shut down. You know, Tandy Way's got to go back to the UK because the UK might shut down. So she's got to get back, and we all had to leave. And it was like, it's like you're having like the best moment of your life, and all of a sudden becomes the most depressing moment of your life. We didn't go. We literally went back, I think, a year to the day. We went back to finish. Wow. And it was the greatest thing to happen because it made that year when we were home, me and Julian worked on elements of the script. Like, we went back to rewriting, and we worked on elements of the script that we felt that still were issues that we were shooting in 2020, stuff that we noticed like, dude, this could be better. We went back and made those things better, and we ended up making a better film in 2021. Some things got reshot, and then we added, we obviously like finished what we didn't get a chance to when we were there in 2020.
That's awesome, man. That's mm-hmm. awesome. Now, you guys just got together and started writing this concept. Can you talk a little bit about the themes of the film? Because I've seen the film. It's a beautiful film. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's haunting. It's definitely dark mm-hmm. without question. Can you talk a little bit about the themes and how you kind of interweave them into the characters a bit without giving away too much, obviously?
Yeah, well, the thing about myself and Julian is that we're both big fans of the Western genre. Mm-hmm. And the way we kind of like broke it down, I think it's maybe Julian's statement, is that the Western is American mythology. America is a relatively young country. And so like the Western is like our mythology. And also for us specifically, the Western, I think, is where America goes to work out its problems. Like there's a lot of, I've written a couple of like Westerns, and like the cool thing about Westerns is there's theme that you can like really explore Westerns and explore from an interesting perspective. One of them is race. And one of them, obviously, you can explore themes of gender. You can explore themes of inequality, expansion. You know, it's just the Western is just like the genre where you can really do some interesting things. So for us, we always approach God's Country like it was a modern Western. And for me, like, For obvious reasons, like the idea of centering a black woman or a marginalized person within the Western genre, which is like this super American genre and landscape, is just, that's the dream for me. You know what I mean? So like for me, that was the core of it. It was just like, this is a Western, and we can approach themes of race and gender inequality and I'm trying to think what's the right word without giving things away, which is like, you know, themes of like sexual assault or mm-hmm. we can really explore those in this genre, but let's not focus on them. Like let's not make these themes. We want to approach it from kind of a subtle perspective. So at the end of the day, it was just like it's a really simple story about one character having a dispute with a couple of other characters, but also this character being considered an outsider in this mm-hmm. community. And that's really what the story is. And obviously there's issues and themes of grief that are being explored in the film as well. These are also universal themes. That's the cool. And that's another thing is like, even though we're kind of like, we're exploring these issues in this particular project, let's like explore from a place of humanity and kind of like things that feel universal. I think grief is something that we've all experienced in some way, shape, or form. So yes. It's important that, for me, it was important that coming into the film, the character is grieving, because I feel like you're going to initially identify with the person like that because we've all been through it. So that's kind of like, I kind of like went off on a tangent, but for me, it was always like, yes, there's a lot of themes in this film, but let's just approach it specifically from story. Character A wants something, character B's getting in their way, and they got to work it out.
Yeah, and you've got a great actor from Yellowstone in your film, mm-hmm. Which I think Yellowstone right now is probably some of the best mm-hmm. television being written right now, without mm-hmm. without question. And if you want to talk about modern Western, I mean Taylor, mm-hmm. Taylor don't play.
He's Mr. Modern Western. I'm not gonna lie. Like I've seen, yeah. Obviously I watched Wind River. You know, it's obviously like exploring like kind of the same landscape as God's Country. Mm-hmm. Hell or High Water, you know, which he wrote, which is probably the best modern Western in the past few years. Mm. Taylor's got it locked. He knows Texas. He knows like the fun. I grew up in suburban, you know, Houston.
Okay.
But just living in that environment, like you drive you drive out of town, you drive west, you know what I mean? Or you drive a little bit out of the, outside of the major cities, like that scene in Hell or High Water where they're herding the cattle across. I don't even remember that. And they're trying to and Jeff Bridges is waiting to go around and he says like, it's the 21st century and I'm herding cattle like from a storm. I'm like, yep, that's really what it's like. And it is though that color, those little nuances that's what makes it feel like a modern Western, you know, like No Country for Old Man is another like great example of this.
I
love it. I love the genre.
Yeah. And I just moved to Austin from LA. So
I'm jealous.
Well, this is where all the cool kids are hanging out, man. This is where all the cool kids are hanging out.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor. And now back to the show.
And there's no state tax, but which is
I'm from Austin to LA. Like when I moved to LA in 2009, I came from Austin. So Austin is like one of the places in the world that I consider home. Like I love the city.
I love Austin. And then you're right, man. You drive outside of Austin, about an hour out, you are not in Austin anymore. Like this is a whole. You're literally in Hell or High Water. You're in Yellowstone. Mm-hmm. It is a completely different world. A completely different everything. But it's interesting. It's really interesting. Absolutely love living here, man. And I got – it's so funny because I got hooked on Yellowstone when we got here. I was like, oh, we got to watch Yellowstone. Now I'm like completely fanatical about Yellowstone and all the stuff that he's doing. But, yeah, that's why I was really excited to watch God's Country, man. It's a really great chapter in the films that are being created in this genre, man. You did a fantastic job. I got to ask, how did you guys get the financing together for this film? And was it before Tawny or after? How did that work out? How did she get involved with it? Because she's a fairly big star now. She's been one of the biggest TV shows on HBO. And, you know, she's mm-hmm. she's no joke.
Yeah, Tandy weighs major. Julian kind of like was inspired by the way we did Low Life. The way we did Low Life was like, we literally made it for pennies. We scraped together everything we could. But the idea was, this is a train that's leaving the station. Partners, financial, whoever, get on board or get out of the way. This thing is going to start this day. Get on and get out of the way. We're not waiting or nothing. So that was the mentality. Julian kind of saw that. And applied that to God's Country. And so we specifically wrote for the aesthetic. We specifically made the film a certain way to where it wouldn't be cost prohibitive, you know, to make it. Like, we weren't making a $5 million movie. We weren't writing, it looks like that way, but we didn't approach like we're writing a $10 million movie or even a $5 million movie. We approached it as make the movie and the story, make the budget or whatever, make it your aesthetic. So we approached it with that same mentality. And like, we were able to find some fun. There was a colleague of Julian's that actually contributed a significant amount for us to like make the film in 2019. But at the time we felt like that wasn't enough to really make it the way we wanted to make it. So we just waited. We were like, let's wait a year and let's start going out to some, at the time we were going to go with just I hate to say the word, like no name actors, but
unknown, actors. Unknown. Yeah. Non-bankable, non-bankable.
Yeah. Non-bankable. And we, I don't think we had even like decided yet, but we were like literally auditioning non-bankable actresses. But then we were like, you know what? Let's wait a year. Let's see if we can get some more financing. And then let's just go out to more bankable actresses, which is what we did. So we spent 2019 offering and really not offering, but like looking to see if we could, you know, find a bankable actress. And we were able to connect with Cold Iron, who ended up being the production company on the film and ended up securing the financing to actually go make the film the way we wanted to make it. And actually working with Cold Iron, we were able, the script went around and it got to Tandy Way's agent reached out to us and was just like, this is really, we really like this. We think this could be good. to anyway, like, what do you, you know, are you interested in her? Of course, we're like, yeah, of course. And so she read it and immediately connected with the material, and cut to a few weeks later, like, we were meeting, me and Julian were meeting with Tandy Way, ironically, at the same, literally the same bar where I met Julian in 2016, and we had our first discussion that led to God's Country. We ended up meeting with Tandy, like, literally at the same place. It was, like, all, like, kismet, serendipitous, as they say. So, yeah, in terms of the financing, like, it was just, like, it really was, like, kind of two, it was, like, a private, a friend of Julian's, who's a really great guy that just really, like, you know, supported what we were doing. He invested, and then it was Cold Iron that kind of came in with the rest of the financing, and that was really it.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. Well, I know you guys are going to have a really successful screenings over at Sundance, and I'm sure it's going to find a home somewhere. I doubt that it won't.
Fingers crossed.
I doubt that it won't find a home somewhere. So I think you guys are going to do just fine. I'm going to ask you a few questions I ask all my guests, man. What advice would, and I think we've kind of talked about it, I'm going to ask it anyway. What advice would you give a screenwriter trying to break into the business right now?
One I've already mentioned, which is like network across. Try to find people that you can collaborate with, that can get, that you can actually make your stuff with. I mean, we've seen it happen with a lot of people who are major forces in the business right now. They collaborate with people who are on the same level as them. And they, like we talked about, just work that muscle. And also, you're putting stuff out there. And when you put stuff out there, it has a value versus not, you know, just writing, writing a bunch of scripts. Yeah, you may get better as a writer, but at the end of the day, the goal is to get your work produced. So I always say network across. And then the second one, I would say take an acting class. I know this is like, take an acting class, mm-hmm. or act in something. Like, for me, one of the greatest lessons I learned was from acting in the stuff that I was working on through the collective. Like, in that collective, one of our guys is a director. He's always putting me in stuff. And he always had me playing like the same character, which is hilarious. And so, like, by acting in things, it helped me. It gave me a different perspective on scene work. Like, a good example was in Low Life. I wrote this huge monologue for like a character in the script, in the movie. If anybody's seen the movie, like, there's a character in the movie that has a tattoo that's a pretty pretty, like, it's something it's offensive to a lot of people. But there was like a story behind it. And I wrote this like crazy monologue about what happened in jail and everything and why he got the tattoo. He's a recently released convict. And it was this cool monologue. And then we got on set and we realized, like, this ain't working. Like, this is too much. Like, it was this huge monologue. And at that time, I got my actor hat on. I'm no longer a writer. I literally was just like, let's cut it. Let's cut this monologue. And let's just make it a mystery. Let's just make it the entire movie that no one knows why he got this. People will constantly be asking that question, and it's going to, like,
so much
it's
harder,
push
yeah.
engagement. It's going to mm-hmm. push engagement for the audience. It'll be like, why does he have this tattoo? Like, because he seems like a really nice guy with this tattoo. And so, like, I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't had my actor hat on. Because my buddies who were in the group that are writers, they were on set that day, and they were, like, begging us not to cut this. They were like, Shane, we're like, no, don't cut it, man. This is what the movie's about. I was like, nah, man, trust me. It's not worth it. Let's cut it. Let's go. And it ended up being like a great decision that I think really like took the movie to a different level. So I 100% recommend take an acting class or act in something. The funny thing is, I think a lot of writers probably originally wanted to act, but they either like we're generally like quiet people, or they don't have the chops, or they were afraid, or whatever you want to say. Mm-hmm. But act. Like, I would definitely like take an acting class. I think it'll make you such a better writer, and it also will help you with getting your stuff out there.
Sure.
Because you're going to meet other actors. You're going to meet other actors, so you can work and workshop your stuff.
Yeah, no question, man. I took an acting class, and I've been an actor, and I hate it. It's horrible. It makes you a better director, too, because you really feel the empathy of what you're asking another performer to do. Because a lot of times directors just like, just dance, man. Okay, dance. Like, you know, just like move here, move there. Like, and it's like, you don't understand. They're open. You have to open yourself up and... Oh, dude, it's...
I highly recommend it for directors. Yes, please take an acting class or act. Because, yeah, you kind of like... They're human beings, not pieces on a chessboard. So you gotta like, you gotta learn how to communicate and talk to them. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Now, what is the lesson that took you the longest to learn, whether in the film business or in life?
Oh man, I wish you would have gave me probably patience.
That's mine.
I think as there's this mentality coming up, and specifically with writers, is that you just got to like write a bunch of scripts. You know what I mean? You got to write a million scripts and just keep putting stuff out there and keep pushing. The thing I've learned as I've grown in this business is it's about quality, not quantity. So like patience, whether it's like, instead of like going and jumping on something new, maybe like stepping away. Like I'm a big fan of like, if you're working on something, maybe step away from it for a little bit and go work on something else. And then don't just put it out there. Don't put something out there until it's ready. And that's where the patience comes in. So like you may work on something and you may think it's like pretty good, but maybe take a step back, step away from it, and then return to it and look at it again with fresh eyes. And you might see some things that you didn't see before that were like glaring issues that now, you know, that issues that weren't glaring before, but now that you read it with this fresh perspective, now they're glaring issues. So patience is something that we had to deal with on God's country because we literally had to wait a year to finish the film. So I feel like in this industry and in life, it's a marathon. It's a war of attrition. So just like, you know, be patient and just like have some resolve. I think those are the things that will carry you throughout this particular industry, throughout this particular experience.
I think the business teaches you patience, man, whether you like it or not. you're going to learn patience if you like it or if you don't like it, because you're going to get a lot of, like I always say, I got shrapnel, lots of it from this business, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, yeah. and that's, but when you first come in, so when's the money coming? When am I getting my first job? When am I getting, like,
yeah.
it's not, it's just, they just don't
even
teach
now,
you that.
I'm still learning that. Like I'm a working writer. I'm technically successful and I still have to learn pay. Even like, when is this check coming? When is this check? And you just gotta be like, look, man, it's gonna come when it's come when it's gonna come. Like you don't control the world. Like
don't,
stop. You
know? Don't push the river. It flows on its own.
Yes. Absolutely.
Now, three screenplays that every screenwriter should read.
Oh man, I'm kidding. Okay. I would say Shane Black's work.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go with
just Shane's Black work. Period. Just like that. That's good.
Yeah, he changed the game. Like Shane changed the game. Like he, a screenwriter before Shane was, I think, was this very kind of like stodgy, formulaic, kind of like, you know, really like not exciting. You know, the read wasn't exciting. It was literally a blueprint for the movie. And then Shane came through and made the read entertaining. So any of Shane Black's work, I would say read Sorkin's work, maybe Social Network. If you wanna like read how dialogue can push the scene. And be careful. Everybody thinks they Sorkin. Everybody thinks they're Tarantino. Everybody thinks they can write great dialogue. Mm-hmm. And we all think that, and I'm sure we all can. I think I'm good at dialogue, but if you want to like really like read how dialogue pushes a scene forward, read Social Network, read Sorkin's work, and then I think the default is Tarantino. Because
he's an anomaly, man. Like Tarantino is, and then you can't write like all you could do is read Tarantino and just be depressed. Because you're not gonna write like him, because nobody could write like him, because he's Tarantino.
Exactly, yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I don't want to do that, because you're gonna read Tarantino like and be like, man, I can't do that, or think you can do that, and then try to do that and really look bad trying to do that. So I'm trying to think, like there's some good like TV TV scripts. I would say read
Breaking Bad. Just read Breaking Bad. Pilot.
There you go. Yeah, read the pilot of Breaking Bad. As writers, read some pilots. There's some good pilots. Breaking Bad, I think Fargo. Fargo's a good.
Sopranos, Mad Men.
Six Feet Under. Six Feet Under. Read like the seminal television work that has like really changed the game. Read it. Like read the pilot to Billions.
Mm-hmm.
if you can. You know, like I try to read a lot of TV pilots when I can. They're generally really good. And they're good at setting things up. That's really what pilots are.
Shay, man, I appreciate you coming on the show, man. I wish you nothing but success at Sundance and keep doing what you're doing, brother. And thanks for being an inspiration to everybody listening, man. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you having me on, man. It's been a lot. It's been fun. It's been a blast.
I want to thank Shay so much for coming on the show and sharing his journey with us. Thank you so much, Shay. If you want to get links to anything we spoke about in this episode, head over to the show notes at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv/168. And if you want to get more Sundance Film Festival coverage, head over to indiefilmhustle.com/podcast. And there you'll be able to see all of our coverage. We're going to be doing a new episode every week with a couple of surprises as well. So definitely check that out, guys. Thank you so much for listening. As always, keep on writing no matter what. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Bulletproof Screenwriting Podcast at bulletproofscreenwriting.tv.